Welcome back, ladies. You are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast, the show that helps you love your actual life so that you don't need to run away from home. Perfection is nonsense and peace is a perspective shift away. And ladies, have I ever had a lot of practice in the past couple hours having that perspective shift? I came home from two really long 12-hour shifts at work, and I was so excited just to throw myself in the bed and go to sleep. And as soon as I pulled into the garage, I saw that there are those fans that you really only need when something has flooded. You know what I mean? Like those sit on the floor fans that are never a welcome sight, especially in your home, especially when you want to go to bed. So I walked inside and asked the first person I saw was my son. And I said, "Hey, was there a flood?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah." You know, like a kid can do because it doesn't affect them and they're not paying for it. And he just was like, "Oh yeah, there's been a flood." And then he just like bebopped along. And so I walked further into the house and yeah, a flood that has spanned probably it just started in the center of the house. So it kind of like worked its way outwards of a toilet that just overflowed. So I have overflowed toilet water all over my house. And it started in the master toilet. And so I am sitting in my car, recording this because I now have like six industrial fans and, they're gonna like rip up all the floor in my house. So anyway, you know what? Peace is a perspective shift away is what I heard some podcasters say. And so I'm trying. It could be worse. It could always be worse, but I didn't love the timing. And we've been in this house like 8 years, and this is like our fourth flood. All different reasons. But I do feel like the Lord keeps sending us this one plague just to our house. So apparently we need to repent and change our ways, and maybe we'll stop getting flooded. Oh my goodness. So this week, ladies, is our last interview for a while. There'll be more. I know some of you are team interview, and I get it. And I am sorry for your loss. But for a little bit, most of the time, we're going to just have me and Rebecca and Katie. And I'm really excited about it. I think it's going to be good. If you have topics you'd like covered, please email hello@momstrugglingwell.com. And we would love to hear from you on that. But today we are gonna hear the last interview for a while. Her name is Annie Grace. I've talked about her a lot. She has a thing called the alcohol experiment, where you kind of objectively look at the role that alcohol plays in your life. And I know that most of us are Christians who listen to this show. And if you're not, that's amazing. We're so glad that everybody's here. But I know that in the Christian subculture, we like to pretend like we don't drink or like we don't talk about it. And it's kind of like it's shenanigans is what it is. So I felt I didn't want to talk about this for a really long time, but I've shared on here so many things. I might as well just keep sharing, right? So yeah, this lady, Annie Grace, has really been helpful to me to drink less, to look objectively at what is alcohol doing? Why am I drinking it? And things like that. So she's going to tell you more about that. But I just wanted to bring her on because she has really made an impact on my life in my thinking about this topic. So let's go ahead and jump right in. Hi, Annie. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I'm so good. Are you? You're in Colorado, yes?
Yes.
You grew up there.
Yeah, I grew up in Aspen, and I live in Evergreen, so it's kind of in the mountains.
Okay, but I am listening to your show or your book, and it says that you grew up without running water.
Yes, this is all true. So I grew up in this tiny little one-room log cabin, and it's on the back of Aspen Mountain. It had no running water, no electricity. We actually had to snowmobile to get there in the winter because the roads closed. So, and before we snowmobile, like before I was born and my dad actually decided to buy something with a motor, he would cross-country ski to get home.
Oh my gosh. What? Okay. is he Amish? Like, what's, what was the...
So he actually grew up in New York City. He grew up in the Bronx, and he was going to DU. He was getting a film degree. He had a, you know, really fast-paced internship in the film industry in New York. And one summer, just after he graduated, some friends of his said, hey, you want to come up and house at our little cabin for a little while while we go somewhere? I don't know. They were like backpacking across Europe or something. And he was like, yeah, sure. So he went to this cabin and just fell in love with it and never left. It's been close to 50 years of him living there, and they just never came back. And so, I mean, they're still really good friends actually to this day, but so he has lived there ever since.
And the backpackers just gave their house to him?
Yeah. I mean, it's, house is a stretch.
Okay. It sounds like it. Oh my gosh. That's so amazing.
I think it was actually sort of built by, like, in the mining era. I mean, it is literally one room, and it is, you know, very remote. Yeah. They weren't necessarily attached or anything. They were just kind of squatting there, and they decided to continue on their backpacking trip and probably just moved into another one of the little cabins around there. So,
okay. So how did that impact your childhood? Just curious.
Well, it's interesting because I've only recently started to think this through, which I think is typical for people. Like, we don't really process how things were, but I had somebody come up to me. He's like, and he had known me for probably a year, and we'd become good friends. And we were just talking, and he's someone who I really respect. His name is Myron Golden. And he, I told him my story. Finally, it came out one day. I was like, oh, and I was like, what do you mean? Oh, and he's like, no, now I get it. And I was like, what do you mean you get it? And he's like, nothing's hard for you. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, everything was hard. Like, of course it was hard, I guess, but I wouldn't have thought of it hard. I didn't know any other way besides, you know, having to go to a spring to get water or an outhouse to go to the bathroom or, you know, bundle up in clothes to snowmobile to get to school. And he's like, yeah, it's because you didn't think of it as hard, that like now in the quote real world, like you don't see things as hard. I was like, and I didn't even get it. I was like, wait, what? And then I was thinking about it more. I was like, oh, we just went camping, actually, my husband and my kids and I. And I did notice that my ability to be uncomfortable is a lot higher than other people's ability to be uncomfortable. I wouldn't have thought of that. And I wouldn't have even made that connection. I would have just wondered, like, it wouldn't even been conscious for me. But yeah, so I do think it was impactful, but I'm only starting to understand now, because as a child, you just know what you know. You don't know that there's anything really different, right? I mean, you know that it's different, but you don't understand what that means.
I mean, water from a spring, though, that feels feels very different. But I did.
But it wasn't like I was coming from running water into water from a spring. I just was born into water from a spring. So
that's amazing. That's really amazing. Okay. That is not why I brought you here today. I wanted you to, so you live not as remote, but still in the mountains. You have a couple kids, right?
Three kids,
a husband. You used to be, or I don't know if you, is this thing of mine full time now?
Yes. So I'm not in corporate anymore.
Okay. Okay. I just want you to tell us your story regarding alcohol a little bit, just real quick about my story. And I've started to share this on the show for so long. I never shared it because I'm embarrassed about it. And I grew up in a home where there was substance abuse. And so there's just a lot of shame surrounding that. Plus being a Christian, like I shouldn't drink, or I should at least pretend I don't drink, or I should never really talk about it or something. Even though Jesus made wine, it's somehow bad. And so cognitive dissonance was everywhere every single time that it got to be 5 o'clock. I felt like I want to, and I don't want to, and whatever. So finding, even to the point where I have gone to AA meetings to see if I was an alcoholic, because I couldn't really tell, because I wasn't in the gutters, and I wasn't, you know, hiding vodka in washing machines and all the things you're supposed to, I don't know, all the things that quote unquote make you an alcoholic. And I couldn't bring myself to say I was an alcoholic. And yet I wasn't happy with how my relationship with alcohol was. I wanted to drink less and I wasn't. So it just was happening behind closed doors, and I wouldn't talk about it, and a lot of shame and all that. So then when I found your method, what do you call it?
Yeah, I guess so. Book,
I mean, the thing that you do full time now, it just
rang true and felt really, really right.
No two migraines are alike. If you experience migraines, you know what I'm talking about. Cove helps you find an FDA-approved treatment that works for your migraine to get the relief you need, and it's all online. You can go to withcove.com and complete a quick online consultation. A licensed doctor will recommend a treatment plan customized to your migraine, and your prescription will be delivered to your door for as little as $10 a month. After just a few minutes, you're going to get a personalized treatment plan from research-backed, doctor-recommended migraine medications. What if you run out of meds, you ask? No worries. Cove sends your migraine meds every month. No insurance is needed, no trip to the pharmacy. Meds are sent right to your door. With Cove, you can have more migraine-free days. That sounds like a good idea. I personally have only ever gotten like one migraine, but I have friends who have dealt with migraines forever. I can't even imagine. If you're one of those people, get the relief you need right now with Cove. It's no wonder they have so many five-star reviews. They've treated over 300,000 migraine attacks and counting. Go to withcove.com/MSW and you'll get 50% off your first month of medication and free two-day shipping. That's 50% off your first month of medication and free two-day shipping at withcove.com/MSW. That's spelled withcove.com/MSW. I wanted to tell you about one of the show's sponsors, Jonas Paul Eyewear. It was founded by Ben and Laura Harrison when their son Jonas was born nearly blind at birth. No parent prepares for news like that, but it did give the Harrison family a window into the world of blindness. Ben and Laura launched Jonas Paul Eyewear, which now specializes in affordable glasses for kids and teens ages 4 to 16. Jonas Paul's mission is to help kids feel beautiful and confident in their glasses. They also make it convenient so there's no extra trips to the eye doctor and no more feeling rushed or pressured to purchase before you're ready. You can test out the glasses and order online, all from the safe, clean comfort of your couch. You can also order a home try-on kit so that you can try the glasses out at home, 7 frames for 7 days, and it just costs $1. Jonas Paul offers affordable prescription glasses starting at $79, including prescription lenses. Or maybe you're in the market for non-prescription blue light blocking glasses. Those guys are perfect for virtual learning and screen time. So listen here, visit jonaspauleyewear.com/momstrugglingwell for a discount code. You'll save 15% off of your next order. That's jonaspauleyewear.com/momstrugglingwell.
So I want you to share, you know, your story. Like, you just give us your spiel. I wanted everyone to hear it firsthand.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I actually became a Christian at 19. So I was not really raised with like a lot of faith either way. My parents were really, you know, they were hippies. They were just like, pick what works for you. And I had a really powerful sort of experience at 19. And then
tell me a little bit about that. That's interesting.
So I was dating this guy. And he was kind of one of the like doom and gloom sort of end days kind of fear-based Christians. And so he basically said, like, I will not marry you unless you believe what I believe. Okay. And so I was like, okay, that's weird. But I guess
but
I'm
going really
to go to the bookstore and buy a Bible. So I bought a Bible. I started at Genesis. Quickly lost interest.
Yeah.
And I was like, Genesis was great. But then you get to Leviticus. And I was like, this is what is happening here. So I put it on the shelf and our relationship turned really turbulent. And I ended up moving in with him at a really young age. Like, and we were living together and it was fighting a lot, just really messy. I was really young, but I felt like I was in love and this was the thing and yada, yada, yada. And I remember just being in my room after one night of just intense fighting and opening right to the middle of the Bible, there's the Psalms. And I just started reading like the Psalms, and it was very much alive. Like it was speaking to me in a way that nothing really ever had, you know? And then there, you know, just months and months would go by and I started to just see comfort in these words and it was really beautiful. And then I remember there was this biker pastor who would come on TV, like TV evangelist, but he was a Harley pastor. Okay. And so he kind of was on TV one night and he was giving these words about what it meant to accept Jesus into your heart and all this stuff. And I remember taking out my Bible and in the beginning of it, I wrote down the words, but I was like, well, I'm not ready for that because like, look at my life. Like, this is a disaster. Like, I'm living with this guy. I'm 15. This is such a mess. I'm so not ready for that. And then a few more months passed and I knew I needed to get out of this relationship. It was really, really horrible and destructive and definitely like making me like stealing my self-worth. And yeah. I just couldn't find the strength to leave. And there was one night where I just opened the Bible again and I just felt like I was spoken to, like, you know, come as you are. Like there's no waiting. Like, I'm not waiting for you to get better. Yeah. Like, that's not the point of this whole thing.
Yeah.
And so I just really like said, okay, I'm yours. And it was amazing. And like very much felt the power to leave the relationship where I'd never felt that power before and did and left. And then, ended up having to actually get a restraining order, move away to get away from this situation, but went to college. And so I entered college with this perspective of like meeting Christians. And I'd never known really Christians before. And I was really intoxicated. Like, I was like, this is amazing. And so we were doing, you know, FCA and all of these groups and, you know, nobody was drinking. And so it was really a non-issue. And then I got married to my husband and we moved to New York City. And I remember first day on the job, the coworkers are like, hey, let's go out for happy hour. I was like, okay, cool. This is what you do. And so we went and I didn't know what to order. And so I was like, but I did watch Sex and the City. So I was like, okay I'll order a Cosmopolitan.
Perfect.
Which is not what the people in New York City really order. Just FYI, for anybody who wants to know, even back in 2004, 2005, okay. When this was. And I got the bill and it was $25. And they paid for it because my first night. But I just looked at this. I was like, $25 for a drink? No way. No how. I'm not doing that anymore. So I didn't really go out to the happy hours. And I actually had a boss. I'd gotten promoted a few times. And I had a boss come up to me and say, hey, you know what? Why aren't you showing up at these happy hours with all the like people from out of town? I was like, oh, I don't really drink. It's like, oh, Annie, come on, let me tell you a thing or two. It's not about the drinking. It's about like, this is where, you know, the deals are done. This is where your ideas are showcased. Everybody's too busy at work. If you want to make a name for yourself in this company, you need to show up. And so I did, and I had a method. I would drink a glass of wine and then a pint glass of water. And because I wanted to be in control. I was very serious about my job and I really wanted to stay in control. And honestly, like when that stopped working and I started to feel myself getting tipsy, I would go to the bathroom to throw up the last glass of wine just to keep drinking, just to stay afloat with all these people who are, you know, probably close to twice my age, mostly men, and who had been drinking for decades. And so because I was really serious about not being, you know, I'd seen the drunk girl at the, you know, and I was like, I don't want to be her. But nobody had told me. My parents didn't drink growing up. They were very like organic and everything wholesome. I mean, I didn't even eat meat or sugar. It was carob instead of chocolate and tofu and the whole thing. And so I didn't have this cautionary tale around alcohol, but I also wasn't really like, I just didn't know what I didn't know. So I didn't know that if you drank enough of it over enough time, you were going to become addicted to it. Like alcohol is addictive to the human being. I had this false assumption that most people have that alcohol is only addictive to the certain subset of this population, these alcoholics who are, if you're not like them, then you're totally fine. And this was really my perception. So I just carried on and fast forward a decade, I had two children and I was drinking close to two bottles of wine a night and I was really, really stuck.
Yeah. That's a lot. And you never think you're going to get there.
No, I couldn't tell you the line. You know what I mean? There was no defining moment of, oh, now this is, it was very slow, very insidious. It was not it was just like, it's a good idea today. You know, I'd get home from work and where I would have put on my running shoes, I was picking up the wine.
Yeah.
And it just seemed easier. And
So the thing you said about how like there isn't an addictive personality and there are not people who are just destined to be alcoholics because there's something wrong with them. The paradigm shift for me was that there's something wrong with alcohol. There's not something wrong with people.
And that's so hard for people to understand. I mean, you know, there's so many different ways to look at this. There are absolutely certain personality traits that make somebody probably more willing to drink more than other people. For example, if you are somebody who really likes to do what everybody else does and you're in a group of people who's drinking a lot, that will keep you drinking. Equally though, if you like to do what everybody else does and you're in a group of people that isn't drinking a lot, that's not going to keep you drinking. If you are somebody who likes to try new experiences, that can lead to you drinking more, right? But also it can lead to you getting out of it. So there, these traits are both good and bad. And to kind of put them all together and label them as an addictive personality, like the most recent science I've read says, you know, experts have come together and agreed that like there isn't actually such a thing. And it's the same with the genetic. There isn't actually a gene you can, you know, test for. If there was, obviously we'd be testing for it and we'd be like, you don't drink because you are susceptible to alcohol. But there are certainly genes that, you know, correlate and places where you can get predisposed, but it's never 100% of the time. And what's much more occurrent is that people grow up in homes where alcohol is very heavily drank and abused, and the home life is very unstable. And one of the things that alcohol does is numb us. And it numbs us from the anxiety, the social anxiety, the internal anxiety. And so it feels like relief. And so we turn to it. And when you're drinking for self-medication, it is, it really takes a turn. And there's neurochemical reasons for that, which, you know, I'm happy to explain, but they're also kind of, you know, it's up to you how much science you want on this episode. But basically the bottom line is that when you start to drink to self-medicate, alcohol becomes much more addictive than it would have otherwise. So you can see that as opposed to it being some elusive gene or, you know, group of personality traits, it's really actually that, you know, if you are in a household that is unstable because of alcohol, you are much more likely to turn to alcohol because of the emotion that you're trying to numb rather than anything else. Equally, you can be like me, having a relatively benign childhood, actually kind of a idyllic in some situations, but then just drink every single day for 5-6 years, you know, by the time it got to daily drinking, it will become addictive. I mean, they have force-fed animals addictive substances. They all get addicted, 100% of them. It isn't that some of them get addicted and some of them don't. And so I think we really overlook that. And it's a protection mechanism, because if we think, I mean, I did it. I thought I had a girlfriend who she became sober with AA, and she told me, and I was like, oh my gosh, we drink together. What about my drink? And she's like, oh no, no, Annie, I was born this way. I've learned this. I'm an alcoholic. I drink alcoholically. It's alcoholic drinking, and you're not. And so for me, I was like, okay, sweet, cool. Permission, you know, I'm good.
When you're a small business, every minute matters and every dollar counts. So why are so many of us still using big banks that charge fees and make us wait on the phone and in lines? You guys know I'm type A and I like to accomplish things well and in a hurry. When you start up a small business at a bank, you normally have to wait days for your account to be approved and set up. I love Aslo's quick turnarounds where you can get your small business set up fast and focus on the things that really inspire you. Aslo offers a free business checking account. It has invoicing, bill pay, money transfers. There's no minimum balance and there's no fees. And because you listen to this podcast, you can try Aslo Pro free for 14 days at aslo.com/MSW. And Aslo has a brand new pro bundle. For $10 a month, you get tools to organize your money and the ability to set up recurring invoices. Money Magazine calls Aslo the best business banking option for freelancers and entrepreneurs. I recommend Aslo because you're never going to be charged maintenance or overdraft fees, and there's no ridiculous phone system that keeps you on hold forever. Learn more with a free copy of Aslo's Small Business Starter Guide, or get started right now and get Aslo Pro free for 14 days at aslo.com/MSW. There's no minimum deposit required. Get started for free at aslo.com/MSW. That's spelled AZLO.com/MSW. Hey, ladies. I know we're all on a bit of a hand sanitizer spree these days. I wanted to share with you a brand that has a safe, healthy hand sanitizer for the whole family. Pipette has quickly become a customer favorite for its ultra-gentle baby lotions, oils, and cleansers, and right now, you can score 25% off its entire collection of personal care items. Pipette is a clean baby and mom care brand with a mission to give every family the best start. Us parents want what's best for our kids, and that includes using only the safest products on their delicate skin. I'm sure you guys have noticed this too, but when I'm using the hospital-provided sanitizer at work, I notice my hands get really dry. But Pipette's $5 hand sanitizer is infused with soothing skincare ingredients like squalene, which is something that comes from sugarcane, plus germ-dominating ethyl alcohol, so your skin stays protected and soft while eliminating 99% of germs. So go snag your fragrance-free, non-drying, safe for the whole family hand sanitizer today. Visit pipettebaby.com and get 25% off with code MSW. That's P-I-P-E-T-T-E-B-A-B-Y, pipettebaby.com, and use code MSW for 25% off today.
So, okay, so then two bottles a day. You weren't enjoying it by that point. I don't know who the quote is that it says sin, you know, just any addiction or, you know, whatever you want to call it. It'll take you farther than you want to go, keep you longer than you want to stay, and cost you more than you want to pay. And I think I don't all want to admit that, but that is where I am with wine. Mm-hmm. And yet I still can't wait to, you know, get a bottle. And then a lot of times I won't, and then I do. And then it just is a cycle, and stopping is hard. And so when was this epiphany? What did it look like? How did you stop?
So it's so true. I mean, there is a point where, and this would be a great experiment for you to do just in your own journey, but there is a point where wanting and liking become separate. Mm-hmm. So it used to be at the beginning that I wanted to drink my wine and I liked it. And then at the end, I wanted it, but I didn't really like it. And I know that because I remember that I would drink, you know, the reason I was drinking close to two bottles is because my tolerance was so high and I was drinking over long periods of time, probably like 5 to 10 or 11 at night. And I wasn't feeling tipsy anymore. I wasn't feeling drunk anymore. I wasn't getting the benefit, but I was craving it desperately. Like, it was like, I literally thought, if I can't drink, then what's the point? If I can't be, you know, I don't, especially when I was pregnant or when I had to be the designated driver for some reason or another, it would be like, I was just like, well, this is going to suck. You know, this isn't going to be any fun at all. And so I, you know, much like many people realized, okay, this is costing more than it's giving. Yeah. And so I'm going to do what any smart, intelligent person is going to do. And I'm going to cut back. And interestingly, it is in that moment that it becomes, often worse. And here's why, is because we introduce this cycle of, we become conscious to something we weren't conscious of before. We both want something and don't want something at the same time. So we awaken inside of ourselves an argument. And if you imagine conflict, right, you just see somebody down the street and they're arguing with each other, it's going to affect you. You know, if it's in your own house and you're arguing with your husband or your kids, it definitely is going to affect you. But we overlook the fact that when we're arguing with ourselves, when we can't reconcile a key concept or behavior inside our own bodies, inside our own minds, it is highly traumatic. Yet we don't look at it as such because nobody talks about this. So when you both want to drink and don't want to drink at the same time and overdrink and then beat yourself up, you enter this cycle of intense inner stress. And as a drinker, you have been trained, and I mean, both consciously, but subconsciously as well, because neurologically you have pathways that say, when you're stressed, do this thing. Dopamine is a chemical that says, this thing you did, do that again to survive. Like, this is important, do that thing again. And so you have created these pathways of, when you feel stressed, when you feel, you know, overwhelmed, drink. And so you are in this really intense cycle of wanting to drink and not wanting to drink and then beating yourself up about it. And it devolves into, you know, self-loathing, not even knowing who you are, not being able to look at yourself in the mirror. I would wake up at 3 a.m. with this pit of anxiety and just tears and beat myself up and being like, who can consume this much? You're not that huge of a person. I don't even understand what's happening. And like, it's still unbelievable to me, but I would measure it. I was drinking, you know, close to two bottles a night. Like, it is unbelievable that I was drinking that much alcohol, but it was true. And I think for me, I was in that path of just really learning to hate myself in a really big way, not understanding why I was so together in every other area of my life, but this I couldn't get together.
That is the thing that goes around in my head so much. I have accomplished, like, I'm working on my second master's degree. Like, what? Like, I'm doing a good job at so many things. not this.
So true. So true. And yeah, I mean, I was like a corporate executive and, you know, doing really well for myself, had the handsome husband, had the dogs and the kids and all this stuff. And, you know, regularly attending church, all this sorts of stuff. But I couldn't get this one thing. This one thing, it seemed like, okay, that just, I'm not even going to think of it because it was too painful to really consider. Yes. And so one day I was coming back from, I'd gotten promoted many times. I was now global head of marketing for the company I was working for.
Wow.
And I was traveling. I was in charge of 28 countries, traveling internationally 2 times a month, always on business class. Which let's talk about the alcohol in that situation.
Yeah.
It was rampant. And I was coming back from London. We had been up to all hours of the night, with colleagues, which is so funny in hindsight, but that's what we were. We were like literally having an after hotel party in somebody's room, watching some sporting event on, you know, it was people from Australia. We were all in town, big okay. reunion, yada, yada. So it's 3 in the morning, turns to 4 in the morning. I'm finally like, I have to go to get my plane at 6. So I go to my room, I shower, I pack my stuff, and I'm still drunk, and it's starting to wear off, and I'm starting to feel really bad. And so I was like, I need some, like, you know, like over there, it's like basically like beans and ham or whatever. I just need something with substance to put it in my body
yes.
to get myself to the airport, to get home to my 2 young boys and my husband, who deserve the best of me. We're getting the absolute worst, the dregs of me at this point yeah. in my life. And I asked the waitress, I was like, can I have a mimosa? And she's like, oh, I can't open the champagne this early because unless you're going to drink the whole bottle, then like it's yeah. just going to go flat before anybody else comes. So I was like, oh no, I would never drink the whole bottle. And so she's like, but I can offer you a screwdriver, which is vodka and orange juice. But in my mind, this was one of those lines that you just didn't cross. This was like a, oh, hard
so champagne's
alcohol.
Fine.
Yeah, mimosas. We made that okay somehow. Somehow yeah. that's fine,
it's
right?
Yeah.
but vodka at 6 in the morning, ooh, then I'm one of these people. I have that problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm really flirting with that issue. And so I was like, oh, but I was really miserable. So I was like, okay, fine. Give me that.
Never mind that you're drinking at 6 a.m. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
That's
yes,
fine.
For sure. Like it was just like these ludicrous, arbitrary rules we set for ourselves
yeah.
to help ourselves make peace with this cognitive dissonance that we're living with. And so she brought me, I drank a few before I got to the airport. And I was in the tunnel in the bowels of Heathrow Airport, had just gotten off the train. And I was just, I had time before my flight and I was just overcome with emotion. I was just sitting there. I was journaling and I was sobbing. People must have thought that somebody had died. But I was just coming face to face with what a problem this has become in my life.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, I was hanging out with people I didn't care about, beating up and abusing my body. And I had two, you know, family that yeah. loved me at home. And
yeah.
it was so hard. And it was really this moment of just like divinity where I just heard a different question. Like I'd been hearing the question, like, what's wrong with you? Why can't you stop? Like, what is going on? What's wrong with you? And I just heard a different question. I just heard, well, what changed? Why is this happening? Why okay. did you used to take it or leave it in college? And now it's so difficult. It's so hard. Mm-hmm. Why? What has changed? And so in that moment, I made a different commitment. I actually stopped trying to stop drinking. I had been on this road of just self-hatred and, you know, misery, and every turn was making it worse, and guilt and shame and blame.
And none of it makes you stop. Like you just think no. if I could beat myself up more, better, more with more accuracy.
Yes. Yes. If I could just make myself see how far I've fallen, then I would change. And it wasn't working. I was drinking more despite my efforts to change.
Well, cause you're upset.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's your go-to thing, you know?
Yeah.
So I made myself 2 different commitments in that moment. And I made them, you know, and I said, you know what, I'm going to let myself off the hook. I'm going to put down the weapons of shame and blame. And I'm going to put my energy into finding out why. Mm-hmm. And I just felt hope for the first time in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like there is an answer here. There is a reason here. This isn't yeah. just some insanity. And maybe it's not that there's something wrong with me. I didn't know that at the time. There mm-hmm. isn't anything wrong with you or me or any of us, but I didn't know that. And so I ended up like making that commitment. And then I started by writing a list of all the reasons I drank And I started just, and I was still, I just let myself off the hook with alcohol. I was just going to drink. I was going to stop trying to set the rules. And ironically, when you stop trying to set rules, you also stop like doing things like crazy binging and stuff, because you've like said, okay, I can drink. So then you don't feel like this is the last time I'm drinking for one last time. So I have to get it all in my system and whatever. So I did, I think I did naturally drink less over this next year. I didn't track it or anything, but I did do interesting things. Like I started to time how long a drink really made me feel good and what I was feeling right before that drink and what I was feeling right after that drink. And, you know, the first drink might make me feel good for 20 minutes. And then the next drink might make me feel good for 16 minutes. And then after that, I didn't really feel good anymore. Like I was just really like either not really present enough to notice how I was feeling, or I was just, you know, getting into that like weepy, beating myself up stage, you know, three or four drinks in.
Yeah.
And what happened was I'd start to be like, okay, I have 24 hours in a day. I am spending 32 minutes feeling pleasant because of alcohol. I'm spending 7 hours beating myself up because of alcohol. Yeah. I'm spending 3 hours on the cycle of, am I going to drink today? Am I not going to drink today?
Yeah.
And I started to see the cost in a different way because I was actively drinking and observing. And I got really, like really observing, but without beating myself up, without the judgment, without the shame, without the blame. And at the same time, I started just going into the science. And I was like, okay, does alcohol really relax you? And I'd start to read studies and it would be like, oh my gosh, like alcohol, actually the response in your body to drinking alcohol is to release adrenaline and cortisol.
Yeah.
Those, that's the stress hormone. And there was study after study after study, like everything that I thought it did for me, it didn't do. It, and so at the end of this journey, it took about a year for me. I walked out of my office. I told my husband, I was like, if you want to drink with me tonight, because I'm not drinking anymore after tonight. He's like, what? He didn't believe me at all. He was so skeptical, but we split a bottle of wine and I got sick on a half bottle of wine, which was really interesting because that way my tolerance was so high, but I think it was just like the nail in the coffin, like just over for you, woman. And I was so happy about it. And I think I just stopped. And what changed for me, what I now know, you know, science, recent science has now confirmed this, is that there's so much science out there about habit formation and habit change, right? And they all say like, it's 21 days. No, it's 61 days. No, it's 90 days. No, it's this. No, it's that. And like the most recent studies have come out of Stanford actually. And they say, no, all of that is not true. Those things are correlated, but the thing that actually changes a habit is emotion. And more specifically, positive emotion. So in my previous attempts to stop drinking, I was feeling all sorts of negative emotion. I was feeling shame and guilt and blame and overwhelm and self-pity. I was feeling deprived, all of these things. Yes. And in this next attempt, I was feeling proud of myself. I was feeling like a subversive minority. I was feeling like I knew something everybody else didn't know. I was feeling like I escaped, like, you know, got off the train and like I could see the train was going off a bridge. Right. And relief, all of these really like good emotions. And through the journey, I was feeling curiosity and I was feeling self-compassion. And I think curiosity is a really positive emotion. It opens up hope. It opens up possibility. It opens up like a new way of possibly being. And through that experience, I can really see that when I attempted it with that mindset, like it was easy. It was effortless. So the conclusion of the story is really that I took all those journals and I put them in this really dirty PDF out for download. And I shared it on a few Facebook sites or whatever. And 20,000 people downloaded it in 2 weeks. It was crazy. And so I started getting emails from all over the world from people who are like, oh, this helped me too when nothing else did. And I just got an email recently for someone who read that very dirty version of the book. And he's 5 years, you know, 5 years without a drink just because of that.
That's got to feel amazing.
It's so cool. It's really cool. And so people are like, you should make this a book. And I was like, okay. And so I made it a book and self-published and put it out there. It's now traditionally published because it, you know, went just kind of mini viral and sold a lot of copies and publishers got wind of it. And so it went to a bidding war with the top five publishers.
You're kidding me.
No, it was awesome.
Gosh.
It was really fun.
So you also have the alcohol experiment, which is 30 days of looking at this stuff.
Yeah.
Every day you get email. It's always free. I'll do your advertising for you.
Woo-hoo.
Always free.
Always free.
I love how kind it is. I love how non-committal and non-judgmental. I am so mean to myself that I don't need any outside help. So I appreciate, I just have appreciated that space to just kind of be my yourself and try some stuff out and be curious. And I don't know, I'll do good for a little bit and then I'll just, I feel like such a failure if I have a drink, you know what I mean? So that's why I'm trying to, but I can tell that my mind's, it just is shifting my actual mind. And I can tell what you're saying, that it just does not, you don't even have to try. You just stop.
So and I think you just need to be just, you know, my personal advice to you would just be like super patient with yourself. Mm-hmm. Like it's going to happen in its own time and it will be right. And, you know, it doesn't, despite what, you know, a lot of people will say, it doesn't always have to be black and white for everybody. I mean, there's nothing else on this planet that we say, you know, 100% is success, but 99.9% is total failure.
That is such a good point.
Yeah, you can be 10 years sober and have one drink and now you're...
Start the clock over.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. We don't do that. And a lot of times, I mean, I think people, you know, there's something called decision-making fatigue. And when you're trying to moderate, there's just a huge burden of decisions. I actually have another like free ebook. It's like the 6 things you need to know about moderation according to science. What URL is that? I think it's canimoderate.com and it's free also. But it is really like goes into this idea of decision-making fatigue and like the thing that you really, if you make decisions, cost us energy, brain power. And so if you're making like decision all day long to how much am I going to drink? When am I going to drink? Am I not going to drink? Am I going to, like, you can do it. Like I could moderate for certain amounts of time, but I always ended up feeling deprived. I always ended up feeling like I was missing out. And for me, just making like a firm decision of like, okay, 30 days. But another thing that I don't like to do is I don't like people to say, I'm never drinking again. I actually think that's really counter to how the brain works for a lot of reasons. Number one, the brain will tell you like, oh, well, what if you're 93 and you're in Italy and you're at some, your great granddaughter's communion because she's married an Italian and you have to drink the wine and it's real. And like, I mean, you know, it's just like ridiculous. Yeah. And so, and you're not going to know you're successful till you're dead. So that's fun, right?
That's such a good point. Yeah, that's no fun at all.
So I'm like, you know, just make, I like the idea of building on success, making a commitment, making a firm decision. So what I would do sometimes is I'd like, okay, I'm not going to do it this weekend. And if I did that and I told my husband, then I wouldn't think about it because it wasn't this daily drama, but that felt really good and freeing because I was like, okay, the decision is made for the weekend. Even if I feel sad for myself, even if I feel this, this is made. And so I think, you know, really trying to work with the brain instead of against it, because a lot of the things that we've been trying, they work really directly against, like, there's a forbidden fruit syndrome. That's a real thing. There's the what the hell effect. That's a real thing. And like these actual, like that is literally a scientific thing, that what the hell effect.
But I love it.
But it's like the idea that once you have one, what the hell, you might as well like have a ton more. And that's how they write it up in the journal. So
that's so funny.
I can say that word on your podcast.
Oh, you can say it.
So anyway, but yeah, those things are things that like the traditional methods, not taking into account that the brain works in certain ways. And it's really counter, but I do believe that the path through this is absolute radical grace for yourself first. And I think that the beautiful thing about that is that when you can learn that for yourself, you know more about yourself than you know about any other human. So you know more about your own capacity for ugliness and nastiness and gossip and jealousy and all of these things. And so, of course, it's going to be hardest to have grace for yourself. Hmm. But guess what? If you can learn that, you truly can have grace for any other person because it's so hard to learn it for yourself.
It's true. It's so true. Okay, so you have the alcohol experiment. There's the book. You have a podcast called This Naked Mind. But now you have something new called The Path. And so I want you to share about, you also have the alcohol experiment live, which I've done. What's your head coach's name?
Scott.
Scott. I knew it was an S. I really like that guy.
Yeah, he's in the other room for filming some content.
He's awesome. A great guy. Okay, so tell me about The Path and where people can get all of this information.
Yeah, awesome. So we just created a membership program called The Path, which is at nakedmindpath.com. And it is really... I was noticing that some people take 30 days, some people take 6 months, and I just wanted to make it much more modular and much more guided. So there's daily coaches that have been certified in This Naked Man methodology coach in there every single day. It's really, really cool. And The Path stands for pause, act, transform, and hone. And so it really mirrors exactly my journey of, you know, really that pause of letting myself off the hook, learning the skills of grace for myself. And so we actually don't have you stop drinking when you join. And I think that's really different and really important. I actually think that when you have all the noise of the decision-making and the stress and the should I, shouldn't I, like you don't actually have enough space to maybe understand some of the concepts that would be really helpful to understand about what alcohol really is and what it really does in your body. And so the whole thing has been mirrored after that journey, and then is totally based in all the science.
And so it can go on as long as you need it to go on?
Yeah, exactly. So you can be in the path for, you know, 1 month and you get access to sort of all the content, and then, or you can be in it for, you know, people stay there for a long time. I'm planning, we're actually recording new content right now. That's why I'm all made up today. But we are recording content for about 6 months in right now. So we have, you know, if people want to just stay, and it's assuming freedom from alcohol, because that actually comes relatively quickly when somebody goes through this kind of method, but then working on other things that they want to work on from a mindset perspective, and just like grace and compassion and the voice in your head and how to use it for you instead of against you. So
it's not even about stopping drinking. Like, so this is good for if you've already stopped drinking.
Yes.
This is what you're saying. Okay. I love it. And it's at Naked Mind. Tell me again.
NakedMindPath.com.
I love it. Annie, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. Your work has made a very big impact on me personally, and I'm excited for all the other people who don't even admit that they drink and maybe have a problem with it to hear what you're doing as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Emily. It's been such a pleasure.
All right, ladies, I hope that you loved that. I really was excited to be able to talk to her after just kind of listening to her podcast and being impacted by all of the materials that she creates. I would recommend trying the alcohol experiment. 30 days. It's a lot of really good material. It's a lot of things to think about, and it's free. So Annie talks about how she grew up in really unusual circumstances, but that how she grew up made her really resilient, and she had a really high tolerance for discomfort. I think it's important for us to look objectively at how did our upbringing impact us. So maybe this week you struggle well by going, you know what, this part about my childhood, maybe it was like a little bit tough for me, but now I can do X, Y, and Z because of it. So that's a really great way to have a perspective shift if you have some negative feelings about some stuff that happened in your past. But seriously, if any of this has rung true for you and you thought, oh my gosh, I can really identify with what I was saying or what Annie has said, I would struggle well this week by looking into the 30-day alcohol experiment. Definitely worth it. It's a really unusual take on how to quit drinking. And before we go, I wanted to introduce you to Whitney. She is a Patreon shrug, and she is going to tell us what is giving her life, killing her softly, and what she cannot stop talking about.
So how are you, Whitney?
I am doing well. How are you?
Good. So you live in Virginia?
Yes, I do.
You're a teacher?
I am.
To Chinese students?
Yes. I am a homeschool mom as well.
Oh, cool. All right. Awesome. Okay. So are you ready for your questions?
Sure. Yes.
Let's do this. Okay. So what is giving you life right now?
Going back to church.
Okay.
So we were able last Sunday to go to church for the first time.
What was that like?
And it was, a little different because you don't know what to expect. You don't know how people are going to be acting and what rules I'm supposed to follow. But it was good. It was really good.
Oh, I'm so glad. Are you guys like back on for good?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Our church still changes every week.
Okay.
But things are bad in Texas right now, so.
That's right. Yeah. Well, and our kids aren't able to go to kids programming or anything like that. It's just everyone's in big church, but they even at the end of it said, I'm so glad to go back to church. So.
Oh, good. I love it. Yes. Yay. Okay. So what is something that's killing you softly?
We are doing a kitchen renovation. Ooh. And yes, it's we've had some issues. We had to fire our contractor, which you can relate to.
Absolutely. Was he a dancer too? Was that the problem?
He was not a dancer. He was actually a real contractor. It's just, I think our expectation for what he was supposed to be doing and his vision were just, they didn't line up. So,
hey, that's awkward.
We haven't had a real kitchen since February, but we're,
oh my goodness,
we're getting there, but it is definitely killing me softly.
Did you find a new person?
We didn't. We decided to just kind of, my husband's very handy and he probably could have done it by himself anyways. We were just trying to make it go faster.
Clearly so that did not work.
It did not. So we're just doing it ourselves now.
Okay. Well, it'll be beautiful in the end, I'm sure.
So
keep your eye on that prize. Gosh, how exciting though. I mean, it's a lot of work, but I want a new kitchen.
Oh, yeah. And we live in a really old house, and so we've been slowly kind of fixing things. And the old kitchen was terrible. So it'll be really, really nice.
Good. That's awesome. So what's something you cannot stop talking about?
So I listened to the Struggling Sisters episode, I think it was, when you and Katie tried the limoncello LaCroix.
Yes.
Oh, and I went and bought some, and I cannot stop talking about them. They're so good. And I'd never really drank LaCroix before that. And I'm trying all different kinds. The lime, I think, is my favorite.
Okay.
Limoncello is really good.
They also have key lime. Have you tried that one?
I haven't. I tried coconut. That wasn't my favorite.
What? You can't even say that.
I'm sorry.
To edit that out because that's the very best one. That's funny. But yeah, there's key lime and then there's lime. And I don't particularly like the lime, so I haven't tried the key lime. I'd be interested to see what you thought.
No, I haven't tried it yet.
All right. So what is something, do you have a strategy to struggle well that you'd like to share?
So last year was my first year homeschooling my kids. I worked as a teacher at their school.
What's their ages?
Last year, they were in second and fifth grade. Now they're 11 and 8. And so they're going into sixth and third. They're both boys. And last year, we had a good year and it went well. I've been very involved in their education since the beginning. But either way, so I was trying to do a lot of it not using like a box curriculum. And this year, I decided to use a box curriculum. So to struggle well, I decided, you know, I'm just going to spend the money, have somebody else organize it for me.
Yeah.
And so we're going to do that this year. So
was the reason to not do the box one just to kind of get the best of every, like, what was the reason?
I was going to kind of teach them one subject and then cater it to their age levels, which I think would have worked out better if we were not renovating a kitchen and I'm in grad school too. And so I think I just bit off a little more than I could chew.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
So I'm simplifying a lot.
Way to go. That's awesome. Do you feel excited? Do you feel like, oh man, I let myself down?
Well, I've been trying not to think I let myself down. I think it just kind of happened. There were things I hadn't really planned for, and they still learned a lot.
Of course.
We need to be a little more organized. So
I love it. Well, I think it's a great plan. Let someone else do all that.
That's right.
Thinking. Yes. All right. Well, thank you for being a Patreon Strug.
Yes, I enjoy the show so much. It's one of the highlights of my week.
Oh, that's so sweet. Well, we really enjoy making it.
Good.
Yay. So nice to talk to you and meet you. And go try that key lime LaCroix.
All right. I will.